Last year, Linda Evangelista went viral on X when she announced, "I don't want to sleep with anybody anymore. I don't want to hear somebody breathing."
While Diane Keaton says she's not been on a date in 35 years, and Sharon Stone stated she's had it with dating, it seems like more and more A-list women are choosing to opt out of the idea of romantic relationships.
Then in the last few weeks, film director Sam Taylor-Johnson has found herself once again being more talked about for her marriage to Aaron Taylor-Johnson, who is 23 years her junior, than her work on her new Amy Winehouse film.
Today, we're asking, why are older women subjected to such scrutiny in their search for love, or their decision to live without it? Are we ready to move beyond the cougar and spinster labels? And how can we celebrate autonomy and choice in love at any age?
Let's go straight to the comments.
There's long been double standards in the language that's used to describe women and men in terms of relationship status and dating. Because a single guy, no matter what his age, he's called a bachelor. Whereas there's often a lot of confusion over what you would call a single woman. And quite a lot of the terms aren't really that flattering. And at the same time, a lot of magazines for many years, like Town and Country, they've published these most eligible bachelor lists.
I remember those, like on Tatler and things. Yeah.
Yeah.
But there has been some progress, though, right? In 2013, Time magazine called out Town and Country, saying the eligible bachelor is the close cousin or at least the same posse as that other dubious male icon, the charming prince. The whole concept is fantasy and not entirely a pleasant one. It belongs to a time when women's best future lay in them making a good match. And they conclude, Sarah, by suggesting they start including the world's most eligible women, or if they dare, most eligible spinster.
I feel like I should be aspiring to be on that.
Yeah, we need to like reclaim the word spinster, don't we?
Definitely. People have started using the word bachelorettes as a female version of bachelor, but there's still a lot of words that are used to denigrate single women. So spinsters, old maids, left on the shelf, etc. You know, a lot of these terms, they have started to go out of fashion, thankfully. But there's still this general idea that finding a man is the ultimate goal for a woman. And I think it's a very strong one that we have in our society. You just have to look at the poor gen trope or unlucky in love Kylie, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Can I just say, though, I do feel like that term bachelorette is so American. I don't think I've ever used it. Have you?
No, it just makes me think of bachelorette parties. I don't think of it in the same way as a bachelor on the town. I literally think of it as a hen party, you know?
Yeah. And actually, I had to go and like look on Urban Dictionary to see what was their definition of a bachelorette. And the most upvoted or the most top voted definition was this: a glamorous name sluts give themselves.
Jesus.
Okay.
Wow, Urban Dictionary.
But like you said, it does feel like if you're still dating in your 30s and you've not sort of managed to pair up with someone or bag yourself a partner, you do come under judgment. I remember when I joined Tinder in its very early days and I was about 32 and I was still looking for love. I mean, how wrong was I? I didn't see the future about Tinder. And I had so many young men contact me and say, "Oh my goodness, you're such a MILF." I didn't even have children. Yeah. And I listed that I had no children as well, but I'm still a MILF, right?
That's insane. And 32 is not old. Like, calm down, people.
Yeah.
For me, though, I've never been called a MILF, but I do connect with the term late bloomer.
Yeah.
And it came up the other day. I was reading this article where Rebel Wilson, she's making a lot of revelations in her memoir. And she said that she was 35 when she lost her virginity. And that she'd actually lied to her friends about it up until that point because she was embarrassed. I can relate to that because I was 27 and mostly when I did get round to it, it was to get it over and done with because I felt so ashamed at that age to have not had a proper sexual experience. And it really felt like an indictment of my attractiveness and validity as a woman at the time. You know, I'm 40 now. I'm unmarried and childless, as they would say. And I'm quite comfortable with my choices and I 100% don't believe that women need a partner to be worthy. But I do sometimes relate to that feeling of, you know, other people viewing you as a failure because you haven't.
Yeah, I do really understand that. I do. And, you know, I was single. I think I was the single friend in my friendship group for a very, very long time. And, you know, I met my partner at 40. And I think that what really drove me was I actually was a bit scared not to find my soulmate. You know, I had that very, I have crossed oceans of time to find you, to quote Dracula, kind of love. You know, I'm very romantic, and I know I'm starting to sound a bit like J-Lo about Ben Affleck. But I was not so worried about what people thought about me being single, but more that I wouldn't find that great love.
Yeah, like you were missing out kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing that always confuses me is when you're single, you often get told, oh, you'll find it once you stop looking for it.
Mm-hmm.
And other things that people say is, oh, they can smell desperation a mile away. So if you're too open about wanting to find a relationship, then that's almost going to automatically jinx it. But no one says that about jobs. They're not like, you know, you should play hard to get in a job interview. That's really going to impress them.
You know, yeah, you should definitely ghost people after interviews. That will really work. Nothing says you're interested in a job than never contacting them again.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, but even more than that, I do think that women who are dating in middle age or beyond, there can actually be a lot of stigma that they have to come up against. So this actually brings me to mind of Vanessa Feltz. She's 62. Mm-hmm. And I mostly remember her from, she had a talk show when we were growing up in the 90s. Yeah. And she always seemed quite warm and open. And she was one of a few people who spoke candidly about her weight issues, but also didn't feel like she had to dress frumpily to hide her body. And that was quite, I didn't see that very much. Well, she's actually been on the news a lot lately. She broke up with her younger partner of 16 years in February of last year. And then she's been very candid about wanting to find love again. She actually appeared on Celebs Go Dating in August. And then in December, she told the Mail Online that she has gone on, wait for it, she's gone out 330 nights in a row because finding a man is a numbers game.
What?
And she said, I know, that's a lot of nights in a row. And she said, I mean, you go on as many dates as you can and you might eventually find something nice. And that's what I'm doing. I'm doing my best.
Hold on, 330 nights. Like, you can only do that really in London, can't you? Because I'm,
yeah,
honestly,
yeah, yeah.
If
or
I
New
try
York.
To do that, yeah, if I try to do that in my local town here, there's literally like a cafe and a pizza place. It's like you'd really run out of places to go and it'd be super awkward.
Well, I'm in the outback. We don't even have that. But one of the things I really noticed was how many comments were calling her desperate and basically just too old. So, for example, someone said, there's nout that smacks of desperation more than a mature woman who has to be out every night dolled up and on the hunt for a man. Not a good look, Vanessa, love. Do yourself a favour, make yourself a pot of tea and get those slippers on. And can I just say I love the word nout. Makes me think of my dad.
Yeah, I do too.
And someone else said, 62 years old and overweight. Perhaps Prince Charming may take a while to materialise. Look, there were some supportive comments as well. Someone said, good for her. She's never looked better. Let's hope she finds someone who appreciates her this time.
Can I just say, it really bothers me, that part of the comment where it says, make yourself a pot of tea and get those slippers on. It's like not just that she can't look for love, but that she shouldn't even be going out.
Yeah.
It's like a real undertone there. Not nice.
You shouldn't be seen once you hit a certain age. You should just
and
be finding a way
at home. And that's 62 as well. Is that officially the line? Like at 60, we're meant to just stay inside with our slippers on, drinking tea. Okay.
I do not know.
I've got like 14 years left or something. The thing is about Vanessa, and what I sort of really loved about this story, is that she said she's been on a date with Tinder's most swiped man, who is nearly 30 years younger than her. And the comments were mostly sceptical. I'm laughing more because he's the most swiped man on Tinder. God knows what he's been doing. Has he been on it since 2012, probably?
I don't even know. And also, you kind of think, well, if you're really so swiped and in demand, why are you still single?
Yeah, it makes you a bit sort of suspicious, right?
Yeah.
So there was these comments. I'm the same age as Vanessa. I love seeing her out and about. And some of her clothes are lovely, but I'd be embarrassed swanking around town with someone half my age. This comment. He's fame hungry and she's bloody sad. If only she could find someone nearer her own age to share things with, she'd be a lot happier. Then finally, she's after toy boys and is surprised when they're interested in her money. The men are trading the youthful looks and energy of a younger person for the money and status of an older lady. It's just part of the exchange.
Look, on one hand, I do understand the scepticism. I mean, it's natural to wonder, especially if the much younger partner is just trying to make a name for themselves at that time, you know. And then they've chosen to date someone that will raise their profile. But a lot of the comments were interestingly throwing shade more at her than him. And I think that's what really interests me, because even when older male celebs date, do they get the same kind of comments?
Well, Leo DiCaprio, I mean, he's come under intense scrutiny, hasn't he, for repeatedly dating younger models. But the comments are more about the cringe factor, in my view, not that he's ugly or desperate. And it's mostly joked about, like this tweet. The only certainties in life are death and taxes and Leonardo DiCaprio dating a woman who cannot rent a car. And just to say, I think this is means in America, renting a car.
Yeah. 25 there, maybe, or something.
Yeah. And other people have actively defended it. Nothing about either of these people's behaviour seems weird to me. He's a successful Hollywood superstar. She's a beautiful up-and-coming starlet. This is what is supposed to happen.
Well, it's so interesting that we've been almost trained to expect it. Like, I've seen people talk about, I don't know if you've heard this phrase, men age like wine, women age like milk.
Oh, that's horrible.
It's so visceral, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you don't conform to that viewpoint, you're often mocked.
No, I mean, that's just horrible. And it's like, it really reminds me, do you remember when Hugh Jackman, he announced his separation from his older wife after they've been together for 27 years?
Mm.
And, you know, he's always subject to all these comments about their marriage. And some of the comments were, man is going to slay like Rambo.
Wow.
And then someone pointed out, I've always found it odd how their relationship was portrayed in the media. It was almost like he was being congratulated for staying with his original wife, despite his now fame and fortune. I saw something only recently of them on a beach, and the tone was definitely, isn't he wonderful for staying with her when he could be fornicating his way through Hollywood like Leo?
It never fails to amaze me how much judgment people get for their choice of partner, especially if there's a sort of disparity or a perceived disparity in looks or age. I remember we talked before, I can't remember which episode it was, about how people are obsessed with this idea of odd couples. So if someone seems too good looking for their partner, or if there's a hot young guy and he's with an older woman, there's definitely this feeling that somehow the hot person has been wasted on them, you know, and should be with someone equally hot. Otherwise, it's just, you know, it's just such a shame.
Yeah, you do. You see that a lot. The other big one that they're always doing is Pierce Brosnan and his wife.
Yes.
And someone said, it's such a refreshing change to see a celebrity like Pierce with a normal looking woman and not one that looks like a stick insect.
It's such a backhanded compliment, isn't it? Because it's like they're complimenting them as a couple. Well, they're really complimenting him for sticking with her. But they still have to reference her weight, you know? Like they can't not reference it.
Yeah, and I think the Daily Mail has been doing this for a long, long time, like taking pictures of them whenever they go to the beach, almost trying to get bad angles of her. Like, wow, they cannot believe someone like James Bond would be going out with a normal looking woman.
And let's just say as well, she is absolutely beautiful. But people really seem to struggle with this idea of everybody's got their own definition of beauty and attraction and sexual chemistry. And all those things are really complicated and individual. Obviously, there are relationships that are transactional. And we've talked about that in our Trophy Wives episode.
Mm-hmm.
What I seem to notice, though, is that in a lot of these examples, there's often a lot more derogatory terms for the women in the situation, you know, so like the trophy wife, or they call them a cougar, or this one that's so visual to me, mutton dressed as lamb, you know?
I know, I find that term really strange. And I think you feel like it's always being hurled at people like Carol Vorderman and Amanda Holden for the way that they dress. Like, you're not, you know, almost like you're dressing with your clothes are too tight and too sexy for your age.
Yeah, like you're not allowed to anymore. I can't remember when, but I saw this great post on social media that said 20 things that women should stop wearing after the age of 40. And underneath it said 1 to 20, the weight of other people's expectations and judgments. So Lisa, have you ever been called a cougar?
Yes, actually. And it was really strange because I was 21. I was at college in America for a year and I was dating somebody with a ridiculous, very American name. He was 19, I was 21. And you know, when in the olden days, pre-mobile phones, people would stick things on your dorm door to say, Lisa, meet me at lunch, or you need to do this with me, or this or that. Someone just stuck up a National Geographic kind of animal profile of a cougar. And this was like 1997. So I was like, I didn't know what the reference was. And I was going through the identification of this cougar, these notes. It said, you know, wildcat, you know, predatory, found in Virginia, which is where I was studying. It was like really random. It wasn't until American Pie came out that I understood what a cougar was. But I don't know how I could be a cougar at 21 and he was 19. I mean, come on.
No, that's like, that's a bit much, to be honest. It does feel like since American Pie, people love that term. They even had that TV show Cougar Town. But, you know, someone pointed out, and this was in relation to a 76-year-old Cher dating the 36-year-old ex of Amber Rose. Someone actually commented, countless men with younger women are heralded as virile, but Cher is denigrated and called a cougar. When will this change? She's fabulous as she is, and I bet he has no problem with her or her age. And someone else went on to say, just let her enjoy her life. After all, he's not underage.
Yeah, good point. And this actually brings us on to, you know, the so-called cougar couple I have seen so many critical comments about, which is director Sam Taylor Johnson, who is 57, and her actor husband, Aaron Taylor Johnson, who's 33. I mean, they've been married for 12 years and they have two children together. But the biggest controversy comes from the fact that they met on the movie set of Nowhere Boy when he was 18 or 19 and she was 42 and the film's director. And there is so many critical comments, Sarah, about her. For example, she took away his youth. She met him when he was so young and got pregnant really quickly. He never got a chance to be a fun, normal teenager. It makes me so mad. Then this comment, I've never wished a couple to divorce so badly in my life. And a lot of that is in caps lock.
Yeah. Look, I mean, I've also seen a lot of comments about them on various different platforms. And I actually remember last year, it was in blinds and gossip sites, and there were just all these unsubstantiated rumours that he was cheating on her. And what was weird was how so many people were actually celebrating and encouraging him and saying, oh, they really did hope that he was cheating. Someone on Reddit said, where is Ariana Grande when you need her?
Oh, and, my God.
Just, you know, they're swiping at everyone at this point. And then someone else said, people are celebrating the idea of him cheating because they view it as him escaping a potentially toxic environment / relationship.
But here's the thing, right? They've got a family together. They've got two children. And I think it's just horrible that they're encouraging him to cheat. You know, and also, you know, like what happens when these kids grow up and they start reading the comments?
And that's the mild version. There's been a lot of people who have really leaned onto the more down the conspiracy theory route. And they've suggested that she actually knew him since he was a child through his family and that she fully groomed him. You know, they've obviously both denied that. But the problem is a lot of these people commenting, I'm assuming they're not his family. So they're people who don't know. They've sort of come up with these stories. And I would say even with the people in our own lives, it's really hard to judge any relationship from the outside. For me, it's just a bit weird to be that invested in a stranger's relationship. I mean, we're all a bit interested.
Well, I think it's natural to be curious, isn't it? I mean, it makes you are curious what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It's the degree, though. And as someone on Reddit said, I think it's scuzzy that she went after him, but also what's done is done. And they've been together more than a decade now. I'm too damn old to waste mental energy on judging other people's consensual relationships. And someone else said, I definitely don't advocate for 40-something-year-olds dating 18-year-olds, irrespective of gender. But it's odd to me that people have such an extreme reaction to this woman when there are a good number of men in Hollywood who do exactly the same thing and they don't get nearly as much grief for it.
That's the truth. That is the truth. And, you know, I think what's really interesting about this also, though, is that there is this idea that a lot of these commentators are really motivated by their own crushes on Aaron Taylor Johnson.
Mm.
There was this comment, it's also because she's not conventionally attractive, while Aaron very much is. Her nickname is Granny because she looks her age, which is pretty uncommon in Hollywood. It creeps people out that someone who is young and looks as good as Aaron does is married to someone her age and who isn't, like, extraordinarily pretty.
Mm.
And then someone else said, I don't think anything people say will change his mind. And at this point, it feels like people are forcing their feelings onto him. It's been over a decade. He might wake up years into the future or he might not. There is an additional level of vitriol that women direct to this couple that isn't present in criticism of Macron and his wife, for example, which I believe is uniquely influenced by their thirst for Aaron Taylor Johnson and their resentment that Sam trapped him early on. I mean, Sarah, what do you think?
I do think that does play a role to a certain degree. And I also think there's this persistent idea that older women are no longer sexual beings, or they shouldn't be, you know?
Mm.
I remember you saying to me, this was, you know, between the two of us, you'd seen so many really graphic comments about her dry vagina and things like that. And I don't think that you get the same kind of comments about older men who go after younger women. Look, there's often disdain or people suggesting it's predatory, but they don't do the body shaming to the same extent.
Yeah, I call it vagina shaming. It's almost like this idea that you're like going into perimenopause or menopause and that you're like a little prune, not worth having sex with anymore. It's just like really, really, I feel like that's the whole tone.
Oh, absolutely. And as this person said in the comments, I feel weird talking about it because I think she's disgusting and I never want to sound like I'm defending her actions. But I wish people would direct their disgust towards her actions versus her appearance, because her appearance is not the issue with this relationship.
Bit of backstory. Okay, so Sam, she had previously been married to English art dealer and gallerist Jay Jopling, and they had two children together. And what was interesting is after the breakup, when she started dating Aaron, her husband also started dating the 23-year-old Lily Allen, who was also much younger than him. And this is what The Guardian said. Nice for him because she's young, and I keep saying this, engaging and chatty. Nice for her because he's sophisticated and rich. But for Sam and Aaron, they reference that the tabloids label her as a cradle snatcher, ask her what they could possibly have to talk about, and suggest that when they dine out, they do so in dimly lit restaurants so she can disguise her wrinkles.
Ouch. And she's actually in the news again at the moment because she directed the new Amy Winehouse biopic that's coming out. But she actually started off as a photographer and artist, and Nowhere Boy was actually her first film. And she then went on to direct one of those 50 Shades of Grey films.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also recently spoken out about all the hate they get online. She said, Aaron and I are a bit of an anomaly, but it's that thing. After 14 years, you just think, surely by now it doesn't matter.
Yeah, and I do think it's something they have to deal with on an ongoing basis, because I notice on both their Instagrams, they've limited the ability to comment, or I think even shut down comments. Because I do think, my theory is that people do make a lot of comments about their relationship still. And, you know, like we said, after 14 years together.
Yeah, and day in, day out, that must be absolutely exhausting, just getting the same kind of criticism over and over and over.
Yeah.
And Aaron has even spoken out himself previously and said, no, I'm the one who pursued her. And one of the things he said was, I knew instantly with Sam that I'd found my soulmate. And also, when I met Sam, I'd already lived a life far beyond that of most of my contemporaries. He has spoken about the negativity online that they receive, and he said, that's their problem and their issues and however they perceive life. I live my life to its fullest, and I operate from my instincts and from my heart, and I try to be as open as possible.
Sarah, we're not here to judge their relationship in this episode.
No.
We're more interested in the difference in motivation and attitudes towards older women dating younger men.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and the difficulty is, even in our own lives, we can all look at someone and think, oh, I'm not sure that relationship is healthy. Or even just, I don't think I'd want that relationship. And grooming is a real thing. We're not denying that. There's a lot more research into it these days. But at a certain point, if someone's an adult and they've made a choice, whether we agree with it or not, then I personally think you just have to let them live their lives, because unless they're actively breaking the law or abusing someone who is legally a child, as one of the commentators said, is their relationship legal? Yeah. Is it predatory? Possibly. Will we ever know for sure? Probably not. They could very well be a healthy, loving relationship.
Someone who has had intense scrutiny on her love life is Kylie Minogue. I mean, ever since she came out with Jason Donovan and appeared in Neighbours and sang Especially For You, many, many people have been desperately hoping for a happy ever after for her.
Well, they have. And, you know, for most of us who grew up being read fairy tales, we've been saddled with this sort of lingering idea that a happy ever after means one thing, finding a man. And ideally, Prince Charming with a castle and on a white horse, you know?
I'm an absolute huge Kylie fan. I still am. I followed her through all her phases. So Kylie Minogue, we all know, super famous. She sold millions of records around the world. And she's been experiencing like this real renaissance at the moment with the release of her smash hit Padam Padam and the album Tension, which I absolutely love. She recently won a Grammy, and it nearly killed me, Sarah, when I saw her do a duet with Madonna at one of her concerts recently. And I think this is the first time they've ever been seen together and actually to be singing together. Like I said, I nearly died and went to heaven.
I can imagine for you that would be like the pinnacle. You know, as an Aussie who was born in the 80s, I definitely grew up on Kylie. I mean, I got her debut album on a tape as a kid. You know, the one where her hair was coming out of that. It looked like a record with a hole in it. But for me, if someone says Kylie, there's only one person I think of, and that's Kylie Minogue.
The Kylie Minogue. What I really love is that, you know, yes, she's from Australia, but I do feel like she's become like this huge national treasure in the UK.
Yeah.
You know, and there was this Reddit comment, and I really have to read this and not laugh. One of the very few things I love about being British is everyone unanimously loves Kylie. She's a proper adopted Brit. Even people who aren't crazy about her music in general know at least 5 songs of hers off the radio. And obviously she's gay. She's a gay, sorry. And obviously she's gay Jesus for the UK. Absolutely love her. What a legend.
She is a legend. But she's also constantly been labelled unlucky in love. She's 55, she's never been married and is reportedly single again after ending a relationship with Paul Solomons last year. And people had a lot to say about it, didn't they, Lisa?
Yes, they did. But first, can I just say Kylie has had some of the hottest men on the planet. I'm talking Michael Hutchence, Lenny Kravitz, Oliver Martinez.
Oh.
You know.
Yeah.
So I'd say she's been lucky in love. So here are the comments. Very unlucky in love, just hasn't happened for her. She's had so many relationships and is happy to put it out there when she has a man in tow. But when she's on her own, she goes all private. Can't have it both ways. And then it goes to people blaming her for being single. She's so sweet and happy when she's interviewed and without a doubt still very attractive, even at her age. I mean, come on. This comment is ridiculous. But there must be a reason why she can't ever seem to keep a relationship. Surely not all these guys are to blame. Or maybe she's not all she seems.
Mm.
And then this last comment, someone went on to say, no man wants to settle with her because she's such a hard work and a diva.
I mean, unless they've dated her, I don't know how they know that.
Yeah.
But okay. But, you know, we've said this in previous episodes when we were talking about Alice Evans and Jennifer Aniston. And, you know, we were also talking about Joe Jonas and Sophie Turner, their divorce. But whenever there's a breakup, and especially a high profile one, people really want to decide whose fault it is. And, you know, when a relationship ends, it's often seen as evidence that there's something wrong with the person who's involved. And I think that can actually be applied to both men and women. But women do come under quite a lot of extra scrutiny, especially, I think, because of this idea that we have this ticking clock, you know, we're running out of time. People can accept that Jack Nicholson or George Clooney, before he got married, that they're just having fun and choosing the single bachelor life. But for women, it's either she's been left on the shelf or she just can't keep a man.
Absolutely. And some commentators have definitely pointed out this double standard. This comment, I don't know. I think maybe she just doesn't want to be tied down to one person forever. Then this comment, why do people think this ultra successful woman still needs a man to make her a valid person? I often pity those people who have limited themselves by compromising their dreams just to fit in with society's coupled expectations.
Well, I mean, you were actually saying this to me the other day. If you're a really super, super successful female artist like Kylie, like Mariah, I mean, really, really big. How do you and where do you find a partner?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, dating's hard enough for mere mortals. But then if you're a pop superstar, you're traveling constantly for work, you're on tour. I mean, how would they possibly do that?
I don't know. I suppose it's like that thing, you know, can this person, you know, their ego cope with the competition of being eclipsed by a woman who is an icon? You know, it makes me think of the Oscars love curse.
Yeah, I do remember the media jumping on that whole curse thing, which is, for anyone who doesn't know, it's this idea that actresses, after they win an Oscar, their boyfriend, fiance or husband is going to cheat on them or divorce them sort of like not very long after that. And this famously happened to Sandra Bullock, Halle Berry, and even Kate Winslet. And Carlos Mejia in People said, it's a straightforward archetype born from misogyny, that of the woman who puts her career before her partner. And it makes me think of those A Star Is Born movies. And for me, the ultimate is always going to be Judy Garland and James Mason. But it's always this idea that the females the female starlet, her career starts to take off while the man starts to go on the wane. And I remember people speculating a lot about how that had maybe played a role in the divorce of Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise.
I don't think so, sir. I think it was a lot to do with Scientology.
That might have also played a role.
But no, I know what you mean. She was at that sort of like, she was getting so many great roles when they were dating, wasn't she? Or together they were married. And I think she was seen as like the credible actress and he was a bit sort of like commercial. But yeah, I've seen a lot of comments about this curse and they mostly focus on the male ego. It's almost like men can't handle a woman with more success than them. And this comment, or maybe they finally realise their worth. And finally, these women need to stop thanking their husbands.
Like it's like you thank them, jinxes everything.
Yeah, don't do it.
Well, Carlos Garcia, who's a relationship coach, he said, this is what happens to Hollywood actresses whose husbands and boyfriends flee the relationship because they're unable to play the role of the savior prince that they and others around them have so often played. They call it the Oscars love curse, but it happens at all levels. I've seen men offended because their name appears second in the mail they receive at home.
Wow. Oh my gosh, sensitive.
Yeah. But actually someone put this to the test, and in a 2015 study, they found that the divorce rates actually didn't increase for the women who had won or were nominated for an Oscar.
Yeah.
But it did for the male Oscar winners and nominees. So that's a really interesting, you know, switch up.
Oh, that's interesting. So it might not just be about the male ego thing.
No.
But winning an Oscar usually means a lot more job offers, right?
Yeah.
And as this comment says, the acting job is a continuous time-blocked separation, which I thought was a great way of putting it. Because you often hear that, like they split up because they couldn't spend time together in different time zones.
What's that phrase they always use in their thing? Due to work commitments.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, they're super busy. They're away for long periods of time and they've got constant public scrutiny that they're having to deal with. And then they've got, like, you know, young hot people throwing themselves at their partner all the time. Yeah. I mean, it's going to be difficult.
Mm.
But it does make me wonder if this trope, the one that's being pushed of, you know, a woman's not going to be able to succeed in her career and have a happy relationship, she has to choose. It feels a bit like a patriarchal warning to women to not succeed too much or compete too much with men, or, you know, they're not going to be loved. It does feel that way to me a little bit.
Yeah, and it's giving me like a really strong flashback to being in London. You know, I was there with all my lovely friends. They were smart, ambitious, but we were all single. And not one of us could meet anyone. You know, we were really struggling. And we all came to the conclusion after quite a few white wines, it was because we were, and wait for it, Sarah, we were too intimidating. We were too independent. And, you know, and I think that we all thought, okay, you know, we went home that night going, yes, we've solved the mystery of why we're single. I feel great about myself. But still the next day I woke up and thought, no, it still feels a bit shit. Am I really like the T-Rex in Jurassic Park when it comes to dating? I'm too intimidating. I told myself that for years, or like I'm too strong.
Yeah, I'm too good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's ever really that simple. Yes, there are definitely men who are going to be intimidated by strong, intelligent women. But there are also a lot of wonderful men out there who are attracted to it. And I remember this was a while ago, but my therapist, she said to me, it was only when she met and made friends with this bunch of really lovely, emotionally healthy men, ones who loved their wives and respected women, that she was then able to actually believe that they existed. And that's when she met her future husband. And that does make sense to me, because when you don't believe something exists, you're almost bound to never see it, even when it's standing in front of you.
Yeah, and you can really talk yourself into that, can't you? Because I think I've been saying in so many episodes that I wanted that Kurt Russell, Goldie Hawn relationship. You know, you can see they had so much chemistry and they're really into each other and they've been together for years. But all I kept finding, I felt, were these, I hate to say it, but these Tinder fuckboys in my 30s. There was no Kurt Russells. But then it becomes a bit self-fulfilling. And I'm in it like, you know, like almost like you can get a little bit like bitter. Like you said, you have to remind yourself that there is nice men out there with good relationships with women.
Oh, absolutely. The biggest assumption, though, in all these attitudes is that every woman's ultimate goal is finding a romantic partner and that there's no way that you can be happy without one. So Kylie herself even spoke out about this whole unlucky in love label that she's been saddled with for a long time. And in September, she told Vogue Australia, "It'd be great to move on from the she's lucky in love, she's unlucky in love, because it's just not that simple." And she also said, "I've often wondered if a lot of that started with the fact that I was Scott and Charlene or Kylie and Jason, because it seems slightly disproportionate to me, or someone like Jennifer Aniston, where public interest is disproportionate to the other stuff you do." And finally, she declared, "But I'm happy where I am. I will just state that." So good for her.
Yeah, and I love this era that Kylie's in. I feel like she's having the time of her life and just killing it. And really independently.
It seems like more and more female celebrities are actually swearing off dating now. So in November last year, Linda Evangelista was interviewed by The Times. And the reporter wrote, "When I ask about dating, she looks at me as if I must be mad." She's like, "What?" And then 58-year-old Evangelista said, "Not interested. I don't want to sleep with anybody anymore. I don't want to hear somebody breathing."
Yeah, I get that.
And it actually seems like a lot of women can relate to this. So someone said, "I will never let a man into my beautiful home again. Linda gets annoyed by the breathing. I get annoyed by their lack of courtesy." And someone else said, "I'm sick of people telling me that I need to be in a relationship to be really happy. I am happy. I love my peaceful life with my kids."
Nice. She's not the only one, right? So, you know, Whoopi Goldberg, she's now 68 and been married 3 times. When she was asked about her relationship history a few years ago by the New York Times, she said, "I'm much happier on my own. I can spend as much time with somebody as I want to spend, but I'm not looking to be with somebody forever or live with somebody. I don't want somebody in my house."
I get it. It's bad enough just sharing a house with a roommate anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, I like that. And Jane Fonda, who, by the way, is 86. I didn't realise that.
Wow.
Anyway, she's previously said she's happily unmarried. And when asked about sex, she said, "I don't have time. I'm old and I've had so much of it. I don't need it right now because I'm too busy." Which I love that as a status update.
Yeah. She's like, "I've had it. Was good. On to something else." I've actually seen a lot of comments of women who are older, often postmenopausal, divorced or widowed, and they just don't want the hassle of diving into the dating pool anymore. They've got their adult kids and their freedom, and they don't want to take care of anyone, especially if they've had successful careers and they've got their own money. So, for example, there's this comment. "An older friend of mine is still married, but she once said that she'd given up a couple of decades of her life to raise children. And now that those children are adults, she wants the chance to enjoy her life again. The fact that her husband still expects her to keep being the mum who stays home frustrates her. I think women get burned out from sacrificing for other people's needs and expectations. And those women who do get a taste of freedom and life on their own terms find it's too wonderful to give up." And someone else said, "It's much easier to avoid dating as a woman over 55, since the pool of available and interested men is greatly reduced. Once you're no longer being pestered, you realise how awesome it is to be liberated from the whole dating circus."
Yeah, and it reminds me of a conversation I had with a friend recently about dating and online dating, and they said it's just not natural, the hope and despair cycle. It's too intense, you know, because there's too many options. You're constantly sort of swiping, meeting people, and it's just not a natural state. It creates so much anxiety. So I really understand why people don't want to spend psychic energy on this. I get it. It's much nicer to read a book or do some gardening.
Yeah, me too. I've always thought, oh, look, it would be nice just to meet someone in a natural way. But it seems to be so hard to do that today. Everyone's just online.
Yeah.
But I actually saw a recent study that found that for heterosexual men, if they'd previously been in romantic relationships, they were more likely to want another one. But it was actually the opposite for women. And in fact, the women who were previously married, more than half say that having a romantic partner is not at all important.
Mm.
And what amused me was that they didn't actively say why this is the case in that study. They just noted that women did an even more disproportionate share of the work around the house during the pandemic,
which was when the research was conducted, than they had before.
So they were like, "We'll just leave that there, but we're not saying why."
Okay, so sort of saying something without saying something. I get it.
Yeah. But I've also seen a lot of comments online where people just won't accept that it's the woman's choice to not pursue relationships. And usually, you know, they're quite misogynistic and ageist perspectives. So, for example, because they're too old to have anything to offer anymore, they were dealt a free hand when they were young and attractive, but failed to win the game by selecting a nice guy who would stick around. Lesson for all young women to not end up sad and alone by repeating the same mistakes. Well, I've been told. And another one. Ha, they're not the ones who were ditched and they don't get it. They're calling it something else. But someone else replied on this same thread and said, the reason older women don't want to date is written in the responses to this story. Men are dicks. And obviously we don't mean all men, but she meant all the people posting on that story.
I just think it's the ones that are on Tinder and using Urban Dictionary, Sarah. That's my theory.
Yeah. Just the ones who are the loudest.
Yeah. And it is interesting because I do think it's similar to the comments that we talked about in the age gap relationships, where there are some men who seem to think that older women have nothing left to offer, which I find really, really sad and depressing as a, you know, woman that's getting older myself. And I think what really interests me, though, is that to a certain extent, I'm not surprised by women who are in their late 50s. You know, they're choosing their own company over the dating scene. But it seems to me more and more young women are also getting sick of dating relationships, for example, like Drew Barrymore.
I think Drew Barrymore's a really good example because, look, I love the other women, but they're a bit further away in their life experience than me. Whereas I totally relate to her. She's around our age. I feel like I grew up with her in rom-coms.
I feel like everyone really loves Drew because we grew up with her, didn't we, in the 90s. Yeah. You know, she was in E.T. She's from a famous acting dynasty. She was a regular at Studio 54 as a young girl alongside her mother. She was in rehab by the age of 13. You know, ooh, she was the original kind of wild child, I think. And then she was emancipated at 14 and moved into her own apartment at the age of 15. In fact, and sort of film fact, it's because she wanted to film Poison Ivy. So she had to kind of find a way to make that film because it's quite sexy. And she needed to get around some laws, I think, to make the film. So she's had quite a life.
She really was forced to grow up early.
I mean, she really has had a life. But she's been married, like Jane Fonda and Whoopi Goldberg, 3 times. She tied the knot when she was 19 with bar owner Jeremy Thomas in 1994. But it only lasted 19 days. She then married her second husband, comedian Tom Green, in 2001, but the two divorced a year and a half later. Mm. And it finally seems she found her happy ever after when she married Will Copperman, an art consultant, in 2012, and they had 2 children together. But after divorcing in 2016, she seemed to have settled into her own life and has been taking time off dating. And she told Vulture magazine last year, I spent a lot of my life loving romance and drama and all of that. I just burnt myself out on it. I generally am tired and exhausted.
I can relate to that. You know, I've had a doozy of a year in the last year or so. And I'm like, oh. And I've also been through different phases in my life. And when I've gone through those difficult times, I've definitely felt like I just didn't have the capacity to deal with dating on top of that. And there was this comment that I really related to, and it was, women are better off spending their own money, better off sleeping alone, better off without the stress of having someone else's drama around them, and better off doing what they want to do. The only reason to be with a man is because you are in love with him. Absent the love, women are better off alone. Some men just use women for sex, a nice home, childcare, housekeeper, and cook.
Wow, that quote really hits you quite hard, making me think. I mean, I love all of that. But it also seems like people really need to put away, Sarah, this idea of happy ever after and soulmates to move forward. And, you know, and Drew herself said, I've stopped believing in happy endings. I've started believing in good days. At the end of my movies, there's honesty, there's truth, there's peace. What tomorrow will bring is still in question. There is a joy that's earned by failure or triumph. All those things add up to teach us if we're open to it.
I 100% agree with that. And people, you know, they so often measure the success of a relationship by its length. But I know people who stayed married till, you know, till death, and they weren't actually happy in those relationships. And there are also other relationships that come to an end for whatever reason, but they were actually far more meaningful and healthy, maybe. And people's feelings can change with time. Sometimes people just need a break. So maybe Drew will pull a Diane Keaton and be happily single for life, or maybe she'll change her mind. Who knows?
Well, this is where we got a bit of a plot twist. You know, Drew Barrymore has been saying all this stuff, but I think recently she came out and said that she's sort of off the market and that she's been in something for 3 years. And she was spurred on to say this by apparently being inspired by Taylor Swift's public romance with Travis Kelce, which is quite curious. So it's like, well, what's really going on, Drew?
I am confused now. But I would also say relationships in general are more confusing these days. So the term I keep hearing that's all the rage right now is situationship.
Yes.
But for anyone who doesn't know, a situationship is a romantic or sexual relationship that is undefined and non-committal. And I imagine that'd be pretty hard to make a public declaration of whether you're single or dating when you haven't even worked it out between the two of you. And if you've got kids already, you don't want to rush things. You want to be more certain before you introduce them to the kids or, you know, before you make it official.
I mean, I know that happens quite a lot, that people don't actually want to introduce people to their children for a very long time. And I understand that.
Yeah, yeah. But even young women without kids are still opting out more and more. So there was an interview with Vogue in 2019, and actress Emma Watson, she opened up about being a single 30-year-old woman. But instead of calling herself single, she used the word self-partnered. And Professor Amy Freud said, "It says something about our culture and gender expectations that despite her status and power, a woman like Watson still feels uncomfortable simply calling herself single."
I wonder, like, when you fill out your driving form, you can put self-partnered instead of single.
Or consciously uncoupled.
Yeah, start using these terms. Sarah, you and I grew up in peak Bridget Jones era. You know, this idea that if you're over 30, you're kind of doomed. That's it. You've got to start panicking about finding a man. I mean, I look back at Bridget Jones and go, I can't believe they were thinking that she was fat. I mean, she was like 9.5 stone or something. That's like my lowest weight ever. So there's all these things now. This film is not that old, but I feel like it's another era.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now I feel like it's actually refreshing that someone like Emma Watson does come along and say, oh, fuck that kind of trope. I'm not tragic and single Bridget Jones. We're not going down that road.
Yeah, because there are so many connotations with that word. I also think, for me, the difference between single and self-partnered is single very much suggests that you're looking, you know?
Yeah.
I'm single because I haven't found anyone yet. Self-partnered is very much like, I have a partner, but it's myself. I'm going to work on myself, and that's the most important relationship I have in my life. Anything else is gravy. So I do think there is also something positive about that term.
I think so too, because, you know, that idea, like when Bridget Jones has sat there and everybody's in couples and she's sat there on her own and she's, oh, I've got like green scales all over me.
Yes.
And there's something deficient about me. I mean, it was very self-deprecating and funny, but there was this idea like you had to have quite a lot of shame about being single.
Yeah.
And so I love this idea that more and more seem to be embracing, you know, like, fuck it, I'm not going to find a partner. And you know, and like, let's be honest, a lot of us, we've got more and more options. You know, we can work and support ourselves. We don't have to have children with a partner. We can have children even alone. I don't think having a partner, yes, don't get me wrong, I love having a partner myself and being, you know, with somebody, but it's not necessary for my survival. Well, I hope not.
No, well, exactly. Well, I mean, it brings me to this. I saw this social media video the other day, and it's by someone called The Speech Prof had said that he's been contacted by a follower who said, "Straight men believe they are competing with the top 10% of other men for women's affection. But really what they're competing with is the peace that women feel in solitude."
Mm.
And then there was a reaction video to that by a content creator called Sizor, who he does quite a lot of he's basically trying to combat the whole incel, patriarchal, women-hating culture, but as a man. And what he said was, "It says a lot about the experience women are having with dating when so many would rather just have a cat." Yeah, hello.
Yeah.
"I saw somebody say that loneliness has treated her better than any man ever has. And the men think dating is hard because they believe all the women just want the most elite men in the world, tallest, richest, best looking, muscles. They think the bar is so incredibly high that only the top 10% of men can ever reach it. Meanwhile, in my comment section, in my DMs, what are the women saying? The bar is in hell. It couldn't be lower. You'd have to drill to the center of the earth just to find it." And a lot of these women are just looking for a dude that treats them like a human being, and they're having a hard time finding them. So they're saying, well, fuck it. I just won't do this then. It's got a lot of guys fucked up because they're used to using the fear of being alone in order to control women. If you do this and this, you're going to die alone. If you do that, you're going to be a cat lady. Bro, they don't give a fuck. That's probably not going to work no more. I was so taken by that. I was like, yes, you've explained it so much better.
Yeah. He said that so well. I mean, that's just like the bar is in hell.
Yeah.
I'm having flashbacks of my Tinder days. Yes. Yeah. And just to be treated like a decent human being. I'm not just someone to sleep with. And you know, and you're going to get angry if I have any expectations or want any romance.
Yeah. I think what I love is this idea that you can't use the fear of being single against women anymore because they're embracing it. And I think there's a power in that.
Yeah. But I've always said to you, Sarah, if my romantic relationships don't work out, I will buy a castle like Enya and live with hundreds of dogs and cats. You know what? Look, I can give you a wing and my other best friend a wing. We can all live there together.
Amazing.
Yeah. And read gothic novels and run around listening to forest music.
Excellent. Well, you know, it's interesting you said that as I was actually reading about Enya the other day, and the Belfast Telegraph wrote this about her. One of the things that plays so well into the Enya enigma is that she lives alone and by all accounts always has done. Home is a large castle just outside Dublin. She's never married and never had children. And then Enya says, I am single, yes. But as the song suggests, there have been relationships. It's quite hard to have someone accept that. Well, not that they are second to the music, but that I do need a certain amount of space for it. And even though the person will understand that at the beginning, there's something like jealousy towards the music after a while. It's difficult.
But that does make me think, you know, there is quite a lot of women I know that are older and they're living alone and they have for a long time. But they're also really creative, you know, and it's almost like their creativity and their passions are their big true love.
Yeah.
And I can really understand that.
Well, it reminds me of this Mae West quote where it says, I'm single because I was born that way.
Oh, I love that. And maybe it's because I met someone, Sarah, when I was 40. I still feel that deep, fierce independence inside me.
Mm.
I don't think it'll ever go away. Like I'm very independent. I found this brilliant article from 1889 asking why spinsters were single. Are you ready to hear?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Bring it on.
So it was like a competition, like, tell us why you are a spinster. And these were some of the answers. Because I do not care to enlarge my menagerie of pets, and I find the animal man less docile than a dog, less affectionate than a cat, and less amusing than a monkey.
Oh, ow.
But this one, oh, God, I love this one. I think I'm going to put this in my house as a quote. Like the wild mustang of the prairie that roams unfettered, tossing his head in utter disdain at the approach of a lasso, which, if once around his neck, proclaims him captive. So I find it more delightful to tread on the verge of freedom and captivity than allow the snarer to cast around me the matrimonial lasso.
Wow. Wow. I mean, Victorian women were savage. These ladies, they know what they want and they're not interested otherwise.
Yeah.
Look, for me, I definitely think a loving, healthy relationship can add to your life. And there are lots of amazing men out there. There's absolutely nothing wrong with wanting love and companionship. And I would say that I would like those things. But I'm just not willing to lose myself to find it. And I really, really reject the idea that as a woman, my relationship status should in any way be the source of my value or my self-esteem.
Yes, love that, 100%. But you do know that we are in a podcast marriage. You know,
yes.
You have the matrimonial lasso around you in that regard.
Yeah, it just has to be a really long rope, that's all.
Yeah.
Oh. I really want to round this up with a quote from you're my favourite woman. Can you guess? Helena Bonham Carter. Her current partner, she has a 21-year age gap with. And what she said was, collagen is not the only form of sexiness. There's character, fun, mischief, and humour. As long as you've got the laughter, the intimacy will be there. And I just say, long live Helena Bonham Carter. I fucking love her.
I do. I just love that. She's actually doing her own podcast now. I think she's sort of reading stories from history about interesting women.
Oh!
And I could just listen to her all day. She's got a lovely voice. But look, I forgot to say in the episode, because you know there's been all this like, who's going to be the next James Bond?
Mm.
Even if it's going to be Jane Bond, like a woman.
yeah.
The big buzz around Aaron Taylor Johnson is that he is the front runner to be Bond. They say because he's the right age, you know, he's, well, obviously he's British. I think that's important.
Mm.
He's 33 and Daniel Craig was 36 when he played Bond. And then obviously you've got to think about all the franchises or like all the films coming up. He's got to start quite young.
Mm.
I mean, I don't know why, but I can never get over Timothy Dalton. I mean, what do you think about who should be the next Bond?
Well, for me, Bond hasn't existed since Pierce Brosnan. I'm sort of in a time warp. I didn't even follow on with Daniel Craig. For me, Bond will always be Pierce Brosnan, and I don't think I can get back into the franchise, to be honest. So I don't care, okay. Really. Yeah, bring back Pierce Brosnan. That's what I say.
Pierce Brosnan at 70, he can revitalise it. Okay. So look, thank you for joining us and listening. Next week we'll be back with a mini, and we're going to be talking about the launch of Elizabeth Hurley and Damien Hurley's new film, Strictly Confidential. And all the online furore around that.
Absolutely. And thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you to our lovely producer, Emily. If you enjoyed today's episode, please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe. It really does help us in reaching more people. You can also follow us on Instagram. Our handle is at S2TCPodcast. You can find out more about the show, get behind the scenes, come and say hello. Until then, see you next time.
This podcast has been produced by Emily Crosby Media.